great to have you all on the Bottom Up Revolution podcast from Strong Towns. I'm Rachel Quedno, program director here. And before we get into the episode, I wanted to let you know that it is our member week here at Strong Towns. Now, on this podcast, almost every week feels like member week because so many of our guests are amazing Strong Towns members doing inspiring things to make their communities more economically resilient. But if you want to learn even more about what our members are doing across the continent, head to strongtowns.org for this week's stories. One thing that Strong Towns President Chuck Marone shared on Monday is that our members are some of the most civically engaged people we know. In a recent survey, over 50% said they're volunteering in their communities. Nearly half said that they had met with an elected official in their town. 16% have actually run for office themselves. And nearly all of them have shared Strong Towns articles and ideas with their neighbors. So if you're a member, thank you so much. We are floored by all that you do, and we're honored to get to play a small part in moving you to action and helping you along the way. If you're not a member and you're listening to that list thinking, well, I volunteer in my community, I share Strong Towns articles, I work with my neighbors to improve my city, then it's time to make your commitment official and join this movement. Head to strongtowns.org/membership to sign up. And if you join at $10 or more per month right now, you'll get one of our awesome new t-shirts. That's a limited time offer. All right, so let's talk about today's guest, Krista Fancher. She is a Strong Towns member who teaches at a unique high school program called the Innovation Diploma at the Mount Vernon School in Atlanta, Georgia. Their approach to learning is very hands-on and encourages entrepreneurship and innovation, exactly the sorts of skills that young people need these days to grow into dedicated citizens who make their communities stronger. I had the honor of working with some of her students this semester on a project where they explored housing issues and how to adapt existing buildings to create more housing opportunities, a very Strong Towns approach. Krista is devoted to helping young people learn, grow, and thrive. And whether you've got kids of your own or have the chance to work with young people as a coach or mentor or just a doting aunt or uncle, I know that you'll learn from Krista's perspective and see how important our young people are as we think about building strong towns for the future. So here's my conversation with Krista Fancher. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Bottom Up Revolution podcast from Strong Towns. Today, my guest is Krista Fancher. Krista, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So can you start by telling us a little bit about yourself and your role as a teacher?
Sure. I've been a teacher across a few decades. I've taught elementary, middle, and high school, public and private. I currently teach high school in a really special program called Innovation Diploma at the Mount Vernon School just north of Atlanta. Innovation Diploma is the thing that drew me to the school because this program is founded on real-world learning and all of our work is outward-facing, goes outside the school. We connect with leaders in the community. That's kind of how we found you. And we get to drive learning based on the students' interests and their questions, which is really the most exciting way to teach. And engagement just goes through the roof when we do it that way. So, you know, I love teaching. I consider it, you know, my life's work, my passion, and what I think about in my free time. But doing it this way is something I've always kind of aspired to. And it just gets more exciting every year, honestly.
That's so great. Yeah, it sounds like a really unique program, although I wish it wasn't so unique because it seems like something a lot of kids would benefit from.
Yeah, that's true. I feel like teaching this way is the ideas of this are gaining momentum, and I hear more and more people talk about it. So I'm really hopeful that as people look for a way to change education, that programs like ours can kind of drive some of that conversation.
How did you find out about Strong Towns, and what interested you in becoming a member here?
Yeah, so I spend a lot of time in my summers kind of, I'm a humanities teacher. So if I know I'm going to teach something about world conflict or affordable housing, right now we're doing one on affordable healthcare, I spend a lot of time in the summers kind of educating myself on those topics because I don't naturally have training in that as a humanities teacher. And so I really try to immerse myself and pull in all the information I can. And I also continue to learn along with the students, which is really fun too. But in doing so, you know, I read everything I can get my hands on. I start looking through websites. Now, I was immediately drawn to your website for a couple of reasons, especially the idea of repurposing structures that already exist within a town and the economic responsibility of a town to maintain economic sustainability, really. It's something I didn't know a lot about and wanted to learn more about. And so I just decided to join. And as I got the emails, the newsletters, like they were super helpful and very informative. So that's when I decided to try to connect with you personally to see if you might be able to talk to some of my students as well.
Well, that's so great to hear. And I will tell my colleague, Lauren, who does our emails, that she is doing a great job.
Yeah, I always appreciate Lauren's emails.
For our listeners, I've been working with some of Krista's students, helping them walk through this project. They've been doing all the work. I've just been kind of listening and answering questions occasionally. So yeah, can you tell us about this project that your students were working on in like small groups, doing, making these proposals? Really cool, like real world implications, I think, of what they were working on.
Yeah, absolutely. We teach in 6-week mods, which doesn't give you a lot of time to mess around. This is a group of sophomore students in the Innovation Diploma who went through 2 courses. So we actually had 12 weeks to do this. The first course was called Massive Change, and we looked at big drivers of change in our country. Sophomore year is focused on the United States, and freshman year has a worldwide focus. So this year we're looking at issues in the United States specifically. And during Massive Change, we kind of used it as a prerequisite to learn all the background information that we could around affordable housing in the United States. You know, we planned this well before we ever heard of COVID. These issues became really important as we worked. And the timing, you know, it was a super interesting intersection between what was happening in the real world and what we were learning. The other course was called American Struggle. And that's where we really got down into dividing the students into groups. Their design groups were to design a solution for affordable housing. And a lot of what we do is just kind of guide them as they work through this work. And one of the things they have to do is find several outside experts that they can collaborate with. Every single group, we had 8 groups, usually 4 students in a group. Every single group went a slightly different direction with their design solution. And then at the end, they present to people outside the school, and they have that moment of, this is scary. And they do it anyway. And it's they're able to share their ideas with people. I think people start looking at them less as students and more as thinkers who really applied a lot of research and a very systematic process to come up with these solutions.
Yeah, I was so impressed with what the students that I was working with came up with. It was basically a proposal to convert, I think it was like a underused hotel into affordable housing. Yeah.
Yeah, that group was really passionate about theirs from the beginning. And as they worked on this project, you know, one of them was very into the technical aspect of making this presentation beautiful and interactive and showing exactly what their design solution was. And others were more about, let's make sure this is feasible. Let's work out the economics of it. And still others were working on like, let's make sure that this is research based and this is something real. And I think the emphasis on keeping it real is important because then students never feel like they're just doing a school project. They're actually working for the community.
Yeah, I was so impressed. Like I was kept reminding myself, they're only in high school. It seemed like something that could be, you know, an actual presentation for like an affordable housing developer.
So. Absolutely. That's kind of what we hope people come away with. One of our sayings is that age and ability are not necessarily the same thing. So yeah, we always want them to present, you know, we give them a lot of work in communication and self-expression. They work a lot in problem solving, solution design. And we always have an emphasis on social entrepreneurship. with a social, cultural, and historical perspective. Like a lot of times we'll zoom out on some of these issues and say, wait a minute, this doesn't seem right. How did we get this way? And there's always an interesting historical story there that we can figure out. Oh, this happened because of this. And that is the best way to teach history, because then they really care because they're engaged with this project.
Can you tell us a little bit about the other projects for this affordable housing focus?
Sure. They were really varied. One of the groups I love the most, their design solution, I thought 100% they were going in this really strange direction. But what happens in design work is, as they kind of bat this idea back and forth, it starts to take shape in a way that's really unexpected and that we could have never gotten to if we didn't spend 6 weeks letting them just wrestle it out between them. So this group thought, we were reading Matthew Desmond's book, Evicted, and really big impact on them. And they read about the family who had to leave their pets behind. And I think that happened a couple of times in the book. And it made a big impact on them. They thought, these poor kids who have all this stress about not knowing where they're going to live, they also lose their best friend, their pets. And so they started out with this design about how could there be temporary housing for pets, for people who are evicted. They had a really hard time with that. Well, through batting this idea about pets back and forth for a really long time, this started to take shape into an entirely different project. And what they wound up doing with their design solution is they created a program and made this really beautiful app. Their solution had two parts. It was for people to get education about their finances and economics, and then to actually learn the ins and outs of renting and how to work with renters and, you know, tenants' rights and things like that. Completely different place from where they started, but really interesting to watch that process unfold. There was a group that worked on how to make tiny homes affordable, you know, on a piece of affordable land that's, you know, not being used. There were groups that worked on using existing structures, which is something I think they took from Strong Towns as well. How can we use existing structures that are being unused or underutilized in a way that can benefit the community? There were several kind of in that vein. For students trying to figure out how to finance and how to make it affordable, another thing that they had to work with a lot was, we need funding from somebody. How can we make this appealing? You know, how can we make someone invest? Like if they realize that the cost of lumber has tripled in the last few years, and they thought, how could we get somebody that's making all this money from in the lumber industry to donate or to want to donate or be responsible to the community this way? And so it made them frame the project in kind of a way where, wow, you get a lot out of this if you donate to a project like this. You know, not only does it help you look good in the community, but you really show that you're invested in, you know, making this kind of investment in the community. So having them realize that at this age is something I hope that they'll carry with them all their lives.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, housing is one of the most complex issues that we talk about and deal with. I think people with graduate degrees and decades of experience still, you know, have not solved the affordable housing problem. So it's great to see them like learning about all those nuances and intricacies of the challenges.
Yeah, that is exactly right. It's when we first started the project, honestly, they kind of sat there and looked at me a little bit with a blank stare, and they said, how can we solve affordable housing? They were just completely confused by that. But we put in a systematic process of steps for design thinking that they worked through. And as they worked through these steps, their project just molds and takes shape in all these different ways. And by the time they've done the research, they have some really good questions that they've generated. And when students generate their own questions and are allowed to just pursue them, that's when the magic happens, right? So they just take off on a couple of these questions. And as they start answering them, they get some really interesting, it's basically letting them go down the rabbit hole and see where it leads. And in each group was kind of a diverse group of kids. Honestly, with COVID and contact tracing, we didn't formulate the groups the way we normally would. We had to pick the groups based on where they were sitting because they can't now sit with a different group of kids. You know, we had to kind of have them in these groups that could move around the building together. Even though they had masks on, we're still very careful about that. And so far we've been successful with that level of care. So we usually try to make sure that we have a very diverse team. Someone maybe who is better at technical aspects of the project, somebody who's great at research, a couple of people who are really comfortable with the communication piece. We didn't really have that luxury, but honestly, it worked out so well. I think people kind of stepped up, like our design leads. Each team has a design lead, and the design lead was able to kind of step up and do what they needed to do. And everyone kept researching through the whole project. That's when you know when it's going well, when they keep asking questions and keep following them and see where they lead.
Yeah, that's wonderful. So what about outside of your teaching role? Like, what do you do in your community beyond your professional job?
Well, a lot of what I've done is kind of halted right now with COVID. But my husband and I are really active in our church. Our Methodist church down the street is in walking distance, and we've always worked with the youth there for years and years. And that's kind of that same kind of investment in the youth. I really believe in that kind of bottom up work for the community. And we've done a lot of coaching in sports. It's kind of the same thing. I think everything that we get involved in usually is student-based in some way or another. We had a lot of great initiatives planned for this year to get our students to the Community Action Center in our town to really help them work in the community garden, find out the ins and outs of a program like that. And we had a lot of neat things lined up that we have to kind of put on hold because we can't have anyone outside in the building and we can't go anywhere this year because of the pandemic. But I've really been impressed with the level of interaction that the students have been able to do, even though we can't physically go anywhere. One of the neat things about the program is, you know, if we need to go somewhere, we put them on a bus and we go. We get out in the community and do things. But now we've had to really get creative. And I think that's kind of true outside of school too. Everything just has to be more intentional.
Before we close, I wanted to ask, you know, what advice do you have for other people who want to take action to make their communities stronger? Maybe especially if they want to help out young people and help support young people in their growth as community members.
Yeah, I'm super glad you asked that because I think that's one thing that's overlooked a lot. I would just say always try to include students in your community planning. Don't assume their age reflects their ability because I think kids surprise you with how much they want to be involved in things like this and the really great ideas that they can come up with, especially when they're well-informed. I think, you know, including kids in every aspect of community development just has huge benefits. They're not going to be kids for that long. You know, they grow up quickly. It's kind of sobering how quickly they grow up and to watch them go out in the community. I've been doing this long enough where some of my former students are fully grown with families of their own. And it's really exciting to see them carry over some of the thoughts and beliefs. One of my former students was one of our outside experts. He works in multifamily housing. And that was kind of a cool moment for me. But including him when he was young in aspects of our community, he's always been a really community-driven guy. And, you know, having him have those experiences as a kid definitely shaped him as a young man and what he wanted to do. And I think if we just keep all that behind closed doors and don't include students, that's a really real missed opportunity. I feel like students are the future of your community and you've got to invest in them, not just in schools, but let them see how this works. Let them in behind the doors and see how things really happen.
Yeah, well said. Well, thank you so much, Krista, for coming on the podcast. And thank you also for your membership at Strong Towns and your interest in this movement. It's so great to hear all the ways that you're sharing this and helping support young people as they grow.
Absolutely. Rachel, it's my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
I don't know about you, but I found Chris's enthusiasm for supporting young people really catching. I hope every kid gets a chance to have a teacher like her, and I'm thankful that she was able to share a little of her story with us. So instead of a listener voicemail or email today, I wanted to give a special shout out. Remember how I mentioned at the beginning of this episode that 16% of our members who filled out a recent survey told us that they'd run for office? Well, we've now heard the results of November elections and wanted to extend congratulations to everyone who's a listener and or a member who ran for office this fall. So far, we've heard about Justin Griffin, who ran for mayor of Richmond, Virginia. We've heard about Jeff Brower, who ran for county chair in Volusia County, Florida. Jen Wallison, who ran for city councilor in Menlo Park, California. And then Adam Lynch, who we mentioned in the last episode, he ran for planning commission in Fredericksburg, Virginia. And we also have a huge list of members who were already in elected office, and I'm just going to run through their names very quickly here to celebrate them. I really apologize if I mispronounce yours. Lindsay Walsh, Jason Hanneman, David Shore, R. Scott Phillips, David Cantu, Anthony Calvins, Jerry Roseberry, Paul Sandifer, Matt Sisko, Kevin Staunton, Marianne McQueen, Sheila Cascadden, Ann Zade, Jared Moore, Brian Scholin, Paul Knudstrup, and Mason Thompson. If you're an elected official and you didn't hear your name on that list, please get in touch. We would love to hear your story. I know that there are a lot of others out there that we just haven't heard from yet. Send in a voicemail or an email to rachel@strongtowns.org so that we can spotlight you at the end of our next episode, whatever you've got to share about how you're taking action. Congrats again to all of those who ran for office. And for any of our listeners, I hope this is a testament to the power of local government and bottom-up action. These are the folks shaping our towns and cities, and we're proud that so many are dedicated Strong Towns members. But you know what we're also proud of? The more than half of Strong Towns members who are regular folks who just care about their places. I'm one of them. I was actually a Strong Towns member for many years before I started working here. I don't have a planning degree. I don't work for my local government. I'm just working to make my town stronger little by little. That's the bottom-up revolution. And I hope you'll join me in being part of it during this member week. Visit strongtowns.org/membership to join the movement today. Thank you from all of us at Strong Towns. We will be taking next week off due to the holiday, but we'll see you back here in December for the next episode of the Bottom Up Revolution podcast. Take care, everyone.